From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We have heard a lot for many months now from Republicans clamoring to take back the White House, the presidency. Gingrich, Romney, Paul Santorum, all still fighting to take on Barack Obama. So what are Democrats thinking about the field of candidates, ideas, and attack lines coming at their Democratic Party incumbent? This hour on Point, big Democrats on the contest shaping up in 2012. You can join the conversation. How do you see the core arguments shaping up in this year's presidential contest? Who among the remaining Republican contenders would make the toughest challenger to Barack Obama, President Obama? What's the president's best pushback? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Let's listen to just a moment here to Newt Gingrich. Big victory in South Carolina. Here he was Saturday night talking to his supporters at the Hilton Hotel in Columbia, South Carolina.
The debate we're going to have with President Obama over the next 8 or 9 months, the outlining of the two Americas, the America of the Declaration of Independence, the America of Saul Alinsky, the America of paychecks, the America of food stamps, the America of independence, the America of dependence, the America of strength in foreign policy, the America of weakness in foreign policy. Those two choices, I believe, will give the American people a chance to decide permanently whether we want to remain the historic America that has provided opportunity for more people of more backgrounds than any country in history, or whether, in fact, we prefer to become a brand new, secular, European-style bureaucratic socialist system.
There's a mouthful, and here's the president at the Apollo Theater in Harlem on Thursday, saying his Republican opponents in the presidential race would take the country in the wrong direction.
America's not going to win if we do the same things, if we respond to our economic challenges with the same old, tired, cut taxes for wealthy people, let companies do whatever they want, even if it's harming other folks, and somehow prosperity is going to trickle down to everybody else. We tried that. I don't know if you remember, but we tried that. It never worked.
We've got a great panel with us today for a look at the Democrats' perspective on the race as it is shaping up. With us from Los Angeles, Robert Shrum. He was chief strategist for the Kerry Edwards campaign in 2004, senior advisor to the Gore campaign in 2000. He's author of No Excuses, Confessions of a Serial Campaigner. Bob Shrum, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
With us from New York is Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor and publisher of The Nation, author of The Change I Believe In, Fighting for Progress in the Age of Obama, a big progressive voice. Katrina Vandenhoevel, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us from Washington and the Brookings Institution is William Galston. He worked on Bill Clinton's 1992 campaign, served as senior advisor to President Clinton on domestic policy, a Democratic centrist. He wrote a piece in the New Republic last month that got a lot of attention. Headline, Why Obama's New Populism May Sink His Campaign. Bill Galston, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
It's great to have all three of you with us. And Bob Shrum, your campaign advisor, just jump in. We're going to talk about the ideas that are moving into play in this election year. But what about the state of play as you look at the president on the one side and the contenders still in the race on the other side? At this point, Romney, Gingrich, Santorum, Paul. What do you see shaping up here, Bob? In a tough economy still, though maybe some signs of improvement. You know, there have been moments when people said the president doesn't have a chance in this economy. How do you look at it?
Well, the president from the beginning has been determined not to let this be a referendum, but to also make it a choice. You heard that in the excerpt that you played a little while ago. And I don't know what specific language he'll couch it in. We'll see tomorrow night. I think we'll get a very clear sense after the State of the Union. But he's going to ask the question, who's going to stand up and fight for jobs, for ordinary people, for hardworking people, for the middle class? The Republicans thought they had a kind of well-engineered alternative in Romney, who would just run as someone who knows how to deal with the economy. He's been pushed further and further to the right in the Republican primary process. And at the same time, he's gotten more and more disconnected with people. I mean, if you look at the data coming out of Florida this morning, there are two polls, one that shows Gingrich 8 points ahead, another shows him 9 points ahead. and one by public policy polling, which is also looking at the people who've already cast their vote, showing the race a virtual tie. This is astounding for a guy who was 22 points ahead in that state. Now, he's going to launch a furious negative assault on Gingrich. He'll bash the president as he goes along because that makes Republican primary voters happy. But it will be very interesting to see, and we're going to start seeing it tonight in this Republican debate, be very interesting to see how effective that is. That is, has Gingrich already been so beat up that beating him up again about the same things doesn't matter? Or does beating him up again about the same things again lead to the same result it led to in Iowa? I don't think we know yet. But I'd say right now, Romney, who is still more likely than anyone to be the Republican nominee, is not developing a very powerful message to take into a general election.
We'll look at the messages that are being carried here. We'll move past the horse race. But Katrina VandenHeuvel, just on its face, this is still very much a race on the GOP side. If you look at this for a moment from President Obama's perspective, who's the toughest challenger for him that might emerge from the four still in?
I think Romney. I think, Newt Gingrich is the anti-elitist elite. We heard in the clip you played, we heard him out of South Carolina, street fighter with a history of poisonous politics, and he knows very well how to exploit the politics of class and culture. But I suspect if there's still a Republican establishment and people within Congress who are paying attention, which they must be, there is fear about a man Rick Santorum on ABC yesterday called a high-risk candidate. I think you see in Newt Gingrich someone who's willing to play the mythic liberal media elite card, the race-baiting card, someone who's very much his own, playing his own side in this. But I do think, coming back to what Bob Shrum said, that Romney has played this so ineptly. I mean, what is going on in that campaign except the arrogance of inevitability that this team didn't prepare a candidate for the issue of tax returns in a year in which you have Occupy Wall Street 99%, and then you have the money fueled via Shelley Adelson's super PAC Newt Gingrich playing up the Bain capital history, the predatory capitalism, you're on your own capitalism. He's now going to release, as you know, tax returns Tuesday. But there are sharks in the water. It's drip, drip, drip. People will say, well, your father, George Romney, in 1967, released 12 years of tax returns. We don't want just one. And this is coming from within the Republican Party, not even the Democratic side. But I think, coming back to what Bob said, we have an opportunity in this country, whether it's Newt Gingrich or Romney. I don't see Santorum or Ron Paul in the endgame. A country's being offered a rare opportunity to have a conversation about two very different visions for our nation and its economy. And on one side, you have what Newt Gingrich laid out in these caustic terms about a Saul Alinsky dependence European economy. I mean, the president tomorrow night has the opportunity to lay out a vision of a country of opportunity, a country for the middle class, a country of security and fairness. Fairness. And he's right, as he said at the Apollo, the Romney-Gingrich economy is a vision of deregulation, tax breaks for the wealthy, corporations, discredited, recycled, repeddled policies, and an assault on the middle class and on the poor, or as Newt would say in his Let's Get Out Our Dick Tracy Decoding Ring, food stamp recipients.
William Galston, join us here. The president made a big speech in Osawatomie, Kansas, last month, and he talked a lot there about inequality. There are plenty of reports out today saying that he will do that again in his State of the Union speech tomorrow night. You came out after his Kansas speech with your piece headlined, Why Obama's New Populism, i.e. Focus on Inequality, May Sink His Campaign. Is that a winning approach to the country's problems for him, Bill Galston, or not?
Well, there's probably going to be less of a fight on this panel than you may have hoped. My view is that the right emphasis is the middle class, and that a less effective emphasis is on the issue of inequality. I think the choice of themes and words matters a lot. There's a long history of appeals to the well-being and opportunity of the middle class and of people struggling to get into the middle class, as being very, very effective in politics. There is less of a track record of an emphasis on inequality, and I won't bore you, but there's a mountain of survey evidence suggesting that the American people, by and large, do not respond as affirmatively to demands for fixing inequality as they do to demands for shoring up the middle class and for programs that seem likely to do that. But where there may be some dissent on this panel is on the strategic situation facing the president. And let me try to explain why. In an election with an incumbent, the incumbent's record is always a centerpiece, if not the centerpiece, of the general election. And the president can try as hard as he wants to turn this from a referendum into a choice, but inevitably it will have important aspects of a referendum. It can become a choice in certain respects, but the president cannot run away from his record. He needs to run on his record, which means he needs to talk about his record and frame it in a narrative that makes sense to the American people.
If he does that, do you think he's vulnerable? How vulnerable to the contenders that are coming up from the GOP side at this point, Bill?
Well, right now, he's not in a strong position, either in public approval or in the condition of the economy. But that could change.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour after Newt Gingrich's big win in South Carolina, talking about with big Democrats about how the 2012 race is shaping up. Gingrich, Romney, Santorum, Paul, the GOP message versus President Obama. William Galston is with us from the Brookings Institution. He was a senior advisor to President Bill Clinton on domestic policy, worked on the 92 campaign, worked on campaigns for Al Gore, Walter Mondale. Robert Shrum is with us. He's a senior fellow now at NYU's Wagner School of Public Service, was chief strategist for Kerry Edwards, worked on the Gore campaign, many, many campaigns, author of No Excuses. Katrina VandenHeuvel is with us, editor and publisher of The Nation, author of The Change I Believe In. Here's Mitt Romney. We heard Newt Gingrich on the fork in the road. Here's Mitt Romney talking about it on January 3rd after the Iowa caucuses, saying that he and President Obama have fundamentally different philosophies of government.
The president has a different view. Instead of seeing a merit society, an opportunity society, I think he takes his inspiration from the social welfare states of Europe. He wants to make us an entitlement society where government takes from some to give to others. The only people who do well in that setting are the people in the government who do the taking from one to give to the others.
Here was President Obama in Osawatomie, Kansas, December 6th, striking a populist chord, but saying it's not class warfare.
This isn't about class warfare. This is about the nation's welfare. It's about making choices that benefit not just the people who've done fantastically well over the last few decades, but that benefits the middle class and those fighting to get into the middle class, and the economy as a whole.
The economy as a whole. Katrina VandenHeuvel, there was the big embrace in his Kansas speech, but there's a lot of expectation that in his State of the Union address tomorrow night, we'll know soon enough, that he's going to be populist, that he's going to talk plenty about inequality. I'm sure you saw Bill Galston's headline, you know, that the populism may sink his campaign. Bill says, you know, watch out for that. Inequality is not the word you want to use, but you're looking at Occupy Wall Street, holding it up as a kind of a harbinger of where public sentiment's rolling, Katrina. Should the president go hard on inequality or not?
I think the president's going to do what I'd call the 99% populism, not the Occupy Wall Street populism. Listen to him in Kansas. He's sounding a little like Bill Galston as he talks about rebuilding, building the middle class, and fighting to get those into the middle class. That's a different kind of speech than a heavy focus on income inequality, the injustices of inequality. I do think what will be interesting Tuesday night is to listen to the president lay out an activist role for government in promoting shared prosperity, a fair society, a more equitable society, because you have, I believe, in this GOP field, the most militantly anti-government Republican field we've seen in decades in contemporary history. And the role of government is a very contested one. You know, it's not just Occupy Wall Street or the 99%ers. Across the board, the Tea Party, look at government, not the size necessarily, but the problem that it seems rigged against ordinary people in this country. And I think that's real. You hear the stories, we see the stories of the lobbying, of the capture of government by the money. And that's why there's a strong push today, not just process, but a real understanding that money's buying politicians, that elections are being taken out of people's hands and put into corporate hands, especially after Citizens United decision 2 years ago. Mm. It's interesting that the president will speak, as reports indicate, about an activist role for government, because President Clinton, at a similar time in his presidency, spoke clearly in your to Bob Schrum and Bill Galstone will remember the exact language, but it was very much about more dismissive of government. But the president is going to stake a claim, and this is going to be a real contested arena. I just say one last thing on this notion of dissing entitlements and all this talk of the social welfare states of Europe. It's worth remembering that there is more intergenerational mobility at the moment in those states of Europe, the advanced Western states of Europe. And also the idea of entitlements. As these candidates head into Florida, are they going to take on the great entitlements, though I think they're rights of our 20th century, Social Security and Medicare? I've heard from people reporting on the trail that Newt Gingrich isn't laying out his position, which is essentially to voucherize Social Security. I think the Democrats can work that terrain, though I wish they'd be bolder and expand Medicare and Social Security, as millions of people have lost their pensions, homes, jobs. But the Republicans, I think, are treading on treacherous terrain with that.
Bob Schrum, give us a little history lesson here to the extent that it applies. 1996, Bill Clinton was, out to look for his reelection, and he came to a State of the Union speech, and instead of pushing back against the Republican line, he kind of co-opted it. That was the speech in which he said the era of big government is over. Barack Obama does not seem to be going in that direction. How do you see the clash of messages shaping up, Bob?
Well, Bill Galston's absolutely right that the context in which a campaign occurs, and I'm speaking here analytically about mm-hmm. the politics of it, really matters. Clinton had an economy in 96 that was clearly improving, was creating jobs. He also faced a Republican Congress that had been elected in 1994 in reaction to the very smart decision he made to push for a tax increase that led ultimately to a balanced budget, something that we find undreamed of today. And he triangulated. His exact words were, the era of big government is over. Now, 2 years later, in the State of the Union message, he amended that and said something like, we've moved past the sterile debate between those who say government is the enemy and those who say government is the answer. And he said the real test was how effective government was. And that's, I think, going to be what the president's going to say. He's not going to say I'm in favor of big government. And I think Katrina's right. He's going to do this kind of 99%, or maybe I could call it Galstonian populism, in which he's going to talk about defending the middle class. He's not going to engage in an abstract debate about economic inequality. He's going to be out there defending specific programs that people care about and the Republicans want to assault. The Ryan Medicare plan, for example, would force the average senior to pay $6,000 more a year for Medicare. I think we're going to hear about that during the campaign. But the word is going to be fairness, not an abstract word like inequality. And the fairness is going to be made concrete in terms of specific initiatives and programs. And I think in that context, the president will also lay out a vision for the future.
Let's hear what our listeners are looking for, thinking about in this contest. Bill, Bob Schrum, Katrina, please stand by. Bonnie in San Antonio, Texas. Bonnie, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping that the Democrats, particularly the president's campaign, would push a little bit more to exploit the real divide between the interests of the average working-class Republican voter and the, you know, wealthy, corporate-friendly Republican agenda that they seem to miss. Focus on the social issues and kind of miss what may be in their own best interest economically, politically, and that's something that only just a little bit, maybe just Newt Gingrich has recently just touched on, but not really fully embraced, and I think that's the real opportunity is exploiting that difference of interest.
Bonnie, that's very interesting. I'm glad you called with that. Bill Galston, what about it? We're hearing a lot in this campaign about two Republican parties out there, a kind of the populist base and the managerial sort of class, or the old elite of the Republican Party. Democrats have felt the wedge for a long time. Now, is there room? Is President Obama prepared to exploit it or figure it out to put a wedge in the GOP in this race?
Well, first of all, I think that split in the Republican Party is real. A very smart journalist by the name of Ron Brownstein wrote a terrific piece about 6 months ago in which he distinguished between the managerial and the populist tendencies within, in the contemporary Republican Party. And by no accident, the two leading candidates in the Republican nomination fight right now are perfect representatives of those two tendencies. But here is the problem. Downscale or working class supporters of the Republican Party are intensely hostile to government. They have been through a generation or more than a generation in which youth, in which their experience is that government has done nothing or less than nothing to help them. Trust and confidence in the federal government is near historic lows. And that is one of the big impediments that President Obama faces. Working class populists may approve of his intentions, but they deeply mistrust the instrument through which he proposes to turn those intentions into realities. And the past 3 years, quite frankly, have done nothing to change their minds on that score.
So if the Democrats, if President Obama doesn't have such a great opportunity to put a wedge between these flanks of the GOP at this point, how does that augur for November, Bill? Does that leave a – there may be divisions in the GOP, but they're still going to be big and united enough to give him maybe an exit?
Well, let me be as straightforward as I can be. There is no precedent for a president winning re-election with his approval ratings in the mid-40s, which is where President Obama's approval now stands. Nor is there any modern precedent for a president being re-elected in economic circumstances such as those we face today. And so one of President Obama's big challenges is to change those two basic facts, because what you have with an incumbent in the race is a classic two-step public judgment. In step number one, they decide whether they want to rehire the incumbent.
Yep.
And if the answer to that question is yes, as it was in 1996, then the race is over before it begins. But if the answer to that question is no, as it was in 1980, then the second question kicks in. Can we trust the alternative to occupy the Oval Office and not blow the country up? And that was the question Ronald Reagan had to answer in the affirmative in order to win the 1980 election. And right now, it looks more like 1980 than 1996, but that could change. And if Newt Gingrich is the nominee, then I confidently predict that the American people will not reach the affirmative answer that they reached in the case of
to
Ronald
the second
Reagan.
One, does the challenger have what it takes to be in the White House? Katrina, what about this then? Do we have a Bill Clinton here or a Jimmy Carter in the White House? And to this point, Bob Schrum says, well, you know, it's going to be a kind of Galstonian populism that Obama runs with here, which is talking fairness, not so much inequality. Now, inequality has been the Occupy Wall Street message. I have heard you embrace that. Is there enough horsepower in fairness, which is kind of motherhood and apple pie, or does President Obama have to pull out the more incendiary inequality argument to fight out of this tough spot he's in?
But, you know, if I had to think of the 99% candidate running this year, it's Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts, and she is embracing the message of fairness. I think fairness means many different things. It's not just, I mean, it is apple pie, but it also stretches to the messages of a system which people feel is rigged against them, which isn't working for working people. You know, I think the Democratic Party does have fundamental problems because there are two or three parties within the Democratic Party. There's a Progressive Caucus, there's a corporatist Democratic Party. Bill Goldstone is right that over these last 30, 40 years, the working class, the white working class, has not seen a government working for them. Their wages have stagnated, unfair trade deals working for corporations. This needs to be addressed in tangible ways. I would argue one way is the housing crisis, which is a ball and chain on our economy, 14 million mortgages underwater, 10 million foreclosures estimated over these next 10 years. They're heading into states, Nevada, Florida. The general election will be played out in those states where the president could work hard to bring tangible relief, concrete relief to people. That is what people need to see in their lives. I think on the issue also we're witnessing in Wisconsin, for example, a Republican Governor Scott Walker may be recalled this summer. 1.9 million signatures gathered in a recall effort by people, teachers, sheriffs, police, students, who feel this governor has overreached with this anti-working class, anti-labor message. In there, the president needs to find some strength. And finally, on the Latino vote, let us not forget as we head into Florida, different perhaps in Florida than in other parts of this country because of the Cuban-American vote. But if it's Romney, I think you're witnessing a Republican Party confronting political suicide. Not, I know, and, you know, we're looking 40 years out before this country's demographics truly change. But even this year, that stance, that hardline stance on the DREAM Act, putting aside a path to citizenship for 12 million immigrants, et cetera, I think could be political suicide for this party. And I also, finally, we're in unprecedented terrain. It will matter who the alternative is. I know all the statistics, the history about incumbents, but I think it will very much matter, as Bill did say, the issue of alternative. And I think that will be more in play than the referendum incumbent factor in this year.
Bob Schrum, there's a call for the president to come out and do something big on all the Americans who see their homes underwater, you know, their mortgages in big trouble. But of course, Bob, that was the red flag that sparked the Rick Santelli rant on CNN way back when, got the Tea Party going. If the president goes that way, big help for those in trouble. Is that the red flag that brings out the GOP base even more vigorously, Bob?
Well, I think the GOP base is going to come out, and I think the president ought to pay very little attention to Rick Santelli rants. I don't think he's going to get support from there in the first place.
Easy to say, but the 2020 elections went hard against the Democrats on Tea Party energy, and Rick Santelli kicked that off.
And lack of Democratic energy. And the lack of Democratic energy, in my view, is because the president carried a message across the country that just did not connect with people. He basically said, it's all Bush's fault. People already knew that. That can be part of the narrative, but it can't be the heart of the argument. If that's the heart of the argument, it sounds like an excuse. So you saw Democratic enthusiasm down, you saw Democratic turnout down, and just as the Republicans are trying to energize their base, the president has to energize his. I think Katrina's right, and I'd be curious as to whether Bill will agree with this. There is a way to do this by talking about fairness, by talking about specific differences on issues, by defending the working class, by the way, that's another term he won't use. He'll use something like hardworking Americans, out of work Americans. And I think if you do that, you can begin to move this process. You know, at this point in 1948, Harry Truman was not only in deep trouble, the economy had gotten to the point where a year before inflation in one month had hit 6%. People wrote him off, thought he had no chance at all. He ran the kind of populist campaign. It wasn't just against Congress. Its content was very populist that actually attracted blue-collar workers, energized the base, and took them to a victory that surprised people.
You think there's enough populist energy in this environment in words like fairness and hardworking Americans? These are kind of classic boilerplate in a time when it's Occupy that had people out in the streets, Bob.
You know, but they're not boilerplate because they haven't been heard very much in America in the last 10 or 15 or 20 years. Bill Clinton, by the way, did a lot of this. I mean, if you look at the Clinton tax bill in 1994, it did introduce a greater element of fairness into the tax code, and that's what the president wants to go back to. But he didn't talk a lot about it in those terms. He talked about it in terms of dealing with the deficit, dealing with the economy. So, Tom, when you suggest those words are boilerplate, I don't think we've talked very much about this in this country.
Yes.
And I think these circumstances, more than any we've seen in our modern lifetimes, make those terms very, very powerful, very motivating for people.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. After Newt Gingrich's big win in South Carolina, we're talking this hour with big Democrats about how the 2012 race is shaping up. Gingrich, Romney, Santorum, Paul, the GOP message versus the Democratic Party incumbent President Barack Obama. William Galston joins us. He served in the Clinton administration as an advisor on domestic policy at the Brookings Institution now. Robert Schrum is with us, big Democratic Party campaign strategist, Kerry Edwards Gore, and many, many more. Katrina VandenHeuvel is here, editor and publisher of The Nation. Lots of response online here. Kestrel says, as an independent, I can tell you that the only Republican I might have considered was Romney. Newt's a megalomaniac. Okay. Rollo says, Democrats shouldn't pretend Obama and their platform are any different from the cronyism of the GOP. Having Obama in the White House is over better than Romney, he says, but this needs to be the year of the third party candidate. Throw the bombs out. Let's get a call from South Carolina, Florence. Scott is calling. Hi, Scott. Thanks. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Pretty well. What do you think, Scott?
I think Obama is done, and the reason I think he's done is because welfare is a failing mechanism. I'm a business owner. I get up every day. My wife gets up every day. We go to work, and we work hard for the things that we have. And I have no issue with having some sort of social mechanism that helps people that honestly, truly need it. But I have seen firsthand welfare at its fault. Employees of mine will not marry just so that they don't lose the benefits. And they get a courtesy call from the inspector that comes to check their housing situation. And so they just gather the things up in the morning and take them out of the house. And the inspector comes through, and there's no one there, and they continue to get rent support.
Hey, Scott, let me ask you. I got that angle. Let me ask you, if I may, why do you associate welfare with this president, Barack Obama? And we've had welfare for a long time. Bill Clinton, Democrat, helped whack it back. You know, a lot of food stamps out there under George W. Bush. Why do you associate in particular with Barack Obama?
Well, it's not really Barack Obama. It's more of the Democratic Party. And like I said, I'm a Republican, and I believe in welfare. I think there are people out there that truly need it. But I believe the Democrats are more lackadaisical and more into systems instead of actually helping people get to work. There's plenty of jobs out there. They might not be what people want. But, you know, I mean, people don't eat ramen noodles because it's what they want to eat. They eat ramen noodles because they have to eat them.
Plenty of jobs. Yeah. I mean, you may be right. I don't know. Pretty high unemployment rate. But I appreciate your call, Scott. Bill Galston, what about this? This is Newt Gingrich's characterization. This is his framing. It's Scott's as well. Fair to Scott. But this notion that this president somehow is responsible for dependency, for citizens' dependency on the government, rather than the independency, as he said Saturday night, that he wants to encourage. Who wins in that framing, Bill?
Well, I think that Newt Gingrich is stuck in the early 1990s, when those issues were very much front and center in our politics. But that's not where the country is now.
But here's Scott responding, and Newt just won.
Fair enough, but South Carolina is a very red state. South Carolina is not the nation any more than Massachusetts is the nation. Mm. If you want a microcosm of the nation, it's Ohio. And the principal issues this year are jobs, the economy, and the nation's fiscal future, in that order. And I don't think the election is going to hinge on welfare. Obama has not particularly been associated with welfare, yay or nay. It is statistically true that there are more people on food stamps now than there ever have been, but that is a function of the widespread social need in the country, not social engineering by Democrats or this administration.
A function of the economic collapse at the end of the Bush administration.
Look, if you know, we made a decision in this country that we didn't want people to have to choose between paying the rent and putting food on the table for their children. And I think the moral proposition underlying that decision is one that the majority of the American people continue to accept, even perhaps Scott. So I think that this is a diversionary move on Gingrich's part.
Katrina, I'll come to you on that.
Okay, sorry.
I just want to come to Bob for a second, to Bob Schrum, on the framing here, Bob, because the top two contenders at this point, I guess you'd say, Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich have both put it in these terms, which Bill Galston says is stuck in the early 90s, but presumably they're making their own assessment here, and they think there's something working when they talk about Mitt talks about the European social welfare state, Newt talks about citizen dependency. They're actively framing it this way, Bob.
Yeah, well, they're stuck not only in the early 90s, they're stuck in the Republican primaries with the Republican base. this stuff appeals to that Republican base. I don't know about Newt, because you can't tell how, you know, when rationality takes over with him, if it does. But Romney is certainly not, if he's the nominee, going to go through the general election trying to have an abstract debate about European social welfare systems.
I've heard him say that phrase I don't know how many times so far.
Absolutely.
It appeals to the delusions of a Republican base that thinks that Obamacare, which is modeled on Romney Care, which is an individual mandate that was originally a Republican idea, is somehow or other equivalent to the public guarantee of health care that you have in a lot of European states. I'd actually favor that. We're not going to do that in this country, at least not now.
You call it the delusions of a Republican base, but throw your mind back to when Ronald Reagan was running, and a lot of Democrats wrote him off in similar terms.
Oh, no, the one thing I would say in this conversation today is I feel very confident that Mitt Romney is not Ronald Reagan. In fact, Ronald Reagan today, these people are Reaganites in name only. He would have real trouble in the Republican Party.
That's someone who
in the past had signed a law liberalizing abortion, had raised taxes as governor of California, who, when he was president, raised taxes repeatedly when he thought pragmatically that he had to, who made a deal on Social Security with Tip O'Neill and a deal on immigration reform with Ted Kennedy. I mean, Ronald Reagan might be anathema in today's Republican Party. They love to invoke him. They don't follow his model.
Katrina, let me come to you, but Amy first in Evansville, Indiana. Amy, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well. What do you see, Amy?
Hey, my husband and I, we're from Indiana, which is a swing state. Hmm. And 4 years ago, as you recall, we elected Barack Obama.
Right.
My husband and I, we have been lifelong Republicans. We split the ticket. We actually voted for Mitch Daniels, who we have a lot of admiration for.
Yep.
And over the past 4 years, my husband graduated from honors with Purdue. I graduated from college. We were making very, very good money.
Yep.
We both lost our jobs. And because of that, we have had to get food stamps. We've had to get assistance. And as a Republican, I look at Newt Gingrich basically talking to me like I'm, you know, the bane of the existence
of the
democracy. And then I look at Mitt Romney as a walking corporation, and I'm like, where are the working class Republicans? Where's our nominee? We Democrats and black people are not the only one on assistance. They're not the only ones who got, you know, pardon me, messed over in this.
Where's your vote headed then, Amy? If you had to do it today and you know it was one of them or President Obama, where do you turn?
President Obama.
President Obama should take this clip of Amy and put it on the State of the Union address.
Amy, sorry, just to wrap up, what do you think?
I just think, you know, I want to see Obama's State of the Union address. I want to see his plans for the future. And if he has a positive outlook, and if he's not demeaning and he has a way to go, then my Republican vote is soon going to be switched to independent. I don't see where these Republicans are going. I don't understand why they don't realize that not every single Republican has $20 million in the bank.
Amy, I appreciate your call very much. Katrina Vandenhoevel, there's Amy on the one side. On the other side, the president's approval rating at a level where, as Bill Galston points out, people have historically not been reelected.
I think the president should listen very carefully to the important voice of your caller, Amy. I mean, what she's speaking to is the fundamental dissatisfaction with the Republican Party, where you have a kind of neo-George Wallace in Newt Gingrich, and a corporate predator, not a job creator, in Mitt Romney. And I think the president needs to reframe the idea of dependence, of entitlement, and speak very clearly about why is it that, you know, the richest in this country, the corporations, are getting the tax breaks when working people, people striving to get into the middle class, people like Amy who have lost jobs in this time of trouble and recession are struggling to make ends meet. And he is speaking now, he did in Kansas, and Bill Galston may not like this language, but he's just pushing back and saying this idea of class warfare is ridiculous. And I think Newt Gingrich and his attacks on, again, the liberal, quote, liberal media and that play on the cultural populism, I think it was Bob Schrum or Bill Galston said that's early 1990s. It's not in sync with a country in economic pain, economic trouble, the voice you heard. Where Indiana goes, God knows. I mean, it was the Indiana miracle that it went for the first time since 1964 mm-hmm. to a Democrat. But I do think you hear in that voice important echoes, messages that this administration needs to sort out, because you need to hear the tangible voices of lived people, their experiences, and find ways to frame that very clearly.
There's a very tangible voice right there. Amy, we wish the best to you and your husband. Hope you find jobs and find your feet. We're talking about President Obama and the Democratic Party view of the race shaping up in 2012. Let's go to Tennessee, Cookeville, Tennessee, and Jerry. Jerry, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. I don't know. Your panel is quite interesting. It's almost like MSNBC panel.
They're Democrats, like, Jerry. That's the way we're framing it today. We've heard a lot from Republicans. Today we're listening to Democrats.
Sure. No, I'm talking about your panel. It seems like they're always to that side of the aisle.
By design. That's what we put together today, Jerry. That's the show. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, yes. To Katrina Vandenhoevel's some of her remarks. So she's saying in a certain way that Newt Gingrich is a racist, in the way that she's using that in the code ring.
Pretty much,
brought up
yep.
earlier.
That's I would mm-hmm. you, that's a fair interpretation of what she's saying. I think.
So I think it would be more fair to say that. Let's see. I've listened to Mrs. Vandenhoevel for many many years. I would say she would be more on the side of Alger Hiss. Than what the Constitution stands for. And I just find it amazing that that they're saying that the president's not using class warfare, and he's talking about fairness and equality. Now, Catherine the Great said 200 years ago, over 200 years ago, that forced equality will make a nation of sheep. It takes away all of their initiative, and it makes them depend on government.
But how do you jump, Jerry, from fairness to forced equality? Isn't that a big jump, or not in your mind, Jerry?
Well, no, that's the term that they're using. Like Katrina said, you know, that's not the word you want to use. You want to use
Jerry. We got. I appreciate your call. Fairness. Okay, one more right here. Anne, Hershey, Pennsylvania. Anne, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 23. I'm part of the so-called Obama generation, and
okay.
a bunch of my friends and I were all, you know, super motivated to vote for Obama, and then kind of disenchanted. But I watched Newt Gingrich's speech last night, and the more I watch these Republican candidates, the more I feel like I don't care if I don't really like Obama. I've got to vote against the Republican Party.
Now, why do you feel that way? They're talking freedom. They're talking independence. They're talking let you get out, let unleash the creative energies of the American people without government intervention, oversight. What's wrong with that?
Well, well and good, but first of all, I fortunately have health care because I can still be on my parents' health plan, which is nice.
Yep.
And you know, for all of us who are just graduating from college, I mean, you know, I can't just go to Bain Capital and make millions of dollars. Like, I have to find a job, and the economy is not one where you just say, well, get government out of the way and it'll be fine for you, because it's not fine.
What do you think, Anne, the president's going to have to say to get people your age who were so important in the last election to come out and really, you know, really get off the bench and support him this time?
I think if he's honest, he'll have to say the country can't go in this other direction. Even if you're not too happy, I mean, you know, we want our right to choose. We want our birth control. We want our health insurance. We want to get a job. I mean, that's the bottom line. I'm only 23. You know, I have a lot of time left, hopefully.
Yep. And thanks for your call. Bill Galston, what do you think is going to pop, if anything, the president out of that 40%, 40-something percent approval rating? What does he need to say to get up into a number that may really work for him in this campaign? He's been president for 3 years and counting now, and it hasn't – and you see where his approval rating is.
Well, first and foremost – the economic momentum that seems to have been building in the past couple of months has to continue and has to intensify. He can't afford a third interruption of what should be by this point a vigorous recovery. And unfortunately, to some extent, he's at the mercy of external events such as what happens in Europe, what happens in China, what happens in India, what happens in Brazil, that he's not in much of a position to control. But it does point to the deeper issue, and that is – that the United States is in a situation economically in the world that it hasn't been in for a very, very long time. The economy is being buffeted by the twin forces of globalization and technological innovation, and the middle class is really getting squeezed. A lot of classic middle class jobs have gone overseas or have gone away because of technology, and they're not coming back. What is our economic future? Where will that young woman and her entire generation go? Where are their prospects for opportunity going to come from? Is the fundamental issue facing the country, and the president has to speak to it.
Bob Schrum, how does he speak to that if people think, well, yes, we need government support, but government is not going to be the fundamental economic driver of that future?
Well, as I said earlier, I don't think an abstract defense of government per se is what's needed here. I think what the president's going to do is set out a vision that both has long-term goals to make America competitive in the world to do the kinds of things Bill is talking about, but is also going to address the present. And he's going to position himself, and I think he's right on this, in terms of tax fairness, in terms of Social Security, in terms of Medicare, in a way that makes Mitt Romney the ideal Mr. 1%. By the way, you ask at the beginning of this which Republican candidate is strongest.
Yep.
I'll tell you who it is. It's somebody, anybody who isn't running right now.
We may still see that. We're out of time. Robert Schrum, thank you for joining us. William Galston, Katrina VandenHeuvel at The Nation. Thanks to all three of you very much for being with us this hour. Listeners, thanks for joining us as well. This is On Point.